I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome to What's Next. Today, we have two members from Niagara Pride with us. The president is Ronald Piasecny. Ron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And how'd I do on the pronunciation?
You did great.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for walking me through it as well. Also with us, Sherry Fawcett. She's a program chair for Niagara Pride. Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you guys, I'm glad you were able to take some time out because you've got a busy month or have had a busy month so far at Niagara Pride. Let's maybe just kind of review what has been going on here in the last month because, what, you kicked it off with a 5K run, right?
We did. So this was the third year for doing the Western New York Pride 5K. This year, we merged it with our LGBTQ Health and Wellness Fair. That was something that we typically held in March to coincide with LGBTQ Health Awareness Week. But what we were discovering was it's Buffalo, it's Western New York. Sometimes the weather is not as cooperative as you would like it to be. So one year we had, I will say, nice weather for winter. Mm-hmm. And next year we had a snowstorm. Mm. So we decided, let's take that event because there's some amazing vendors and organizations and providers that would come to that. And it would be a shame if folks didn't have that opportunity to learn about LGBTQ affirming services because of, again, weather conditions or something preventing them from getting to that event. So we pushed it into May, merged it with our 5K run, which started off as a virtual run, thanks to COVID.
Right.
As I think I've joked with other people, usually the history of our organization being fairly young, the best time to start a nonprofit or to do any programming is during a global pandemic, because, you know, it's so easy, right?
You're trapped. You can't do anything else.
Right. So we started our 5K as a virtual run. That was very successful. We had a good turnout for that. And by turnout, obviously, people were checking in with us, letting us know how they completed the run within a certain time period, all online or through different apps. And then we just decided to grow it. And once COVID restrictions lifted, we were able to create it as a in-person race and merged it with the 5K. And so this year, it was phenomenal. We had close to 60 vendors. We had 40 participants this year, performances.
It was an outstanding day, I mean, from start to finish. And then we had people just kind of milling in from another thing that was going on the campus there. They were just coming over. What's going on here? We're like, hey, this is, you know, Niagara Pride's 5K, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, can we join? I'm like, yes, you can.
Exactly.
So that started things off. And then,
yes,
you know, June, and it's interesting with Niagara Pride, I mean, the different communities that you're reaching out to in Niagara County. I really find that striking because, you know, Lockport, Newfane, North,
yes,
Tonawanda.
Yes.
How has that evolved?
So historically, we have done Pride flag raisings in Niagara Falls only. And that's over a 10-year history that Niagara Falls has been very welcoming and accepting and wanting to have the Pride flag raising. So we were marrying Buffalo's celebration with that. But as the community has grown, and we have seen over the last couple of years the attacks on the LGBTQ community, we felt that it was incredibly important to move Pride into the local communities, into these smaller rural pockets of Niagara County, to show that there is support, that there are allies, that there are individuals that are LGBTQ living in these rural, farm, very kind of isolated areas sometimes, that you don't have to go to Buffalo to be represented. You don't have to go to Niagara Falls to be represented. So for us, it was almost mission critical to get that kind of representation And whether or not we had a festival yet in that area, the flag raising was important to us. So what started off as Niagara Falls moved into Lockport. We also had Sanborn participate with us 1 year. And this year we grew it so that we have North Tonawanda came on board for the first time. They had a flag raising. Lockport, again, continued the tradition. Lewiston, this was their second year, I believe, in Lewiston having the flag raising. The state park, Niagara Falls State Park participated. Niagara Falls again. So it's growing and it's only getting more and more attendance and well-received by individuals.
If we could just talk about that, it's very encouraging to hear that it's growing and it's well received. What would you say is behind that? Just the fact that putting it out there and people just seeing it, people who maybe didn't think it was acceptable, perhaps. I'm throwing words out there in these communities. What do you think about that?
I think it's the way we promote things. We did some live shoots from it and people are on Facebook and on different avenues all the time, and they're seeing how much fun we're having and how proud everybody is. And they're like, I want to be involved. So I think that's what's helping us grow, and more people are being involved. Youth, I saw a lot of youth in
both, I think. Lockport had some youth. North Tonawanda had a large youth turnout. One of their GSAs even attended, so there was a good number of students there even. So.
It's just not the older community. It's everybody. There are babies and strollers and just everybody in the community.
And I think what communities are also realizing, it's without going too far down political rabbit holes, because we can.
and we just might, but
we may.
We'll put that off for a little bit.
What I think a lot of community leaders and organizations and even individuals in the community, they are seeing more and more that LGBTQ people are living open, they're living out, they're out of the closet. So it's not uncommon to find an LGBTQ-owned business or to have your realtor be part of the community or to have people in your church even be LGBTQ. Children, grandchildren are being more expressive with regards to their identities. And so it's harder and harder to look at a community and say, oh, well, that population doesn't exist here. It does.
But it does.
It does, exactly. And so I think that's part of it, too, is that people want to see themselves represented in the fabric of the community that they live in.
Before we get into political things, and we don't have to, and we'll just kind of see how that flows, but from, I guess, a government standpoint, do you sense that officials, no matter their political affiliation, just are realizing this is their constituency?
I think they are.
I think they are, yeah.
I really do. But North Tonawanda, I mean, the mayors, everybody is part of the ceremony. So they realize it's something, either they embrace it, which I'm hoping they are, and they are, or not embrace it.
Right.
Which would show the community, maybe I won't vote for you next year.
Gotcha. Exactly. Gotcha. Also, I think maybe it might be worth noting also some of these businesses that are supporting. Like in Newfane, if I'm not mistaken, you were centered at a local establishment in Newfane,
yep.
right?
Yes. Calhoun's Pub. Yep.
So again, somebody who embraced the opportunity.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So it's really nice to see that, again, it's not just LGBTQ people supporting themselves, because if that was the case, we are number-wise a minority. We don't have those kinds of numbers to be able to affect change by ourselves. So if not for allies and people that support and recognize the need for diversity and inclusivity, regardless of what the minority is, we wouldn't be able to have kind of the things that we have today. And again, we can go down those rabbit holes a little bit more, but I think that's what we're seeing, is that a lot of folks are recognizing and truly embracing that yes, there is a place for everyone in these rural communities, in these smaller towns. Again, you don't just have to go to Buffalo to see an LGBTQ bookstore or to see a business that will have a safe space sticker. You will now see those in places like Lockport. You will see that in North Tonawanda, and it's growing. And we always use the phrase mission critical, but it is critical because without that level of diversity and acceptance, small towns tend to become very homogenous, and that's not good for anybody. I mean, if it's the same type of people, same groupthink, you don't grow. You don't change.
I was going to say, you don't change at all. You get stagnant.
Yeah.
And then people want to move.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the Keenan Center? Mm-hmm. The Lockport was over the weekend. Again, and I guess what, their first time participating as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. How did that partnership come about?
That was, I'm kind of remember who called who. I think it was probably us reaching out to them, just having a general inquiry. Would they be open to having some type of event? And in sitting down with them and having those conversations, it went from just a small, maybe an LGBTQ auction or maybe having a social meetup or something like that. They came to the table basically saying, oh, no, we want a Pride Festival. No, we welcome you. We welcome whatever types of programming and services that are available. We want to showcase that the Keenan Center, again, embraces this idea of diversity and inclusivity. And so their staff and their leadership team is really looking at how to bring in different types of shows and productions and events that showcase, again, the different types of people that live not only in Lockport, but the surrounding areas.
And also, I just love the name in North Tonawanda, Oliver Street Pride.
Yes.
I mean, wow, the smiles came out with the mention of Oliver Street Pride. Tell me more.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my gosh. When I first went, last year to Oliver Street, it wasn't small, but it wasn't large. But, lots to do, different vendors, food, et cetera, drag performances, all kinds of things. This year, they've expanded back even further, and we're growing. It's growing by leaps and bounds, and there was triple the amount of people that we had last year.
Triple.
I'm serious.
Good job, program coordinator.
Well, and I think the credit also goes to the Oliver Street Merchant Association that we partnered with, because I think why that one resonates a lot with us is because a couple years ago when we first started communicating with them, there was concerns. They had never done a Pride celebration. They really were questioning, can people who are allies and not necessarily part of the community, is this something that they can celebrate and be part of and really showcase that is something that is welcome in North Tonawanda? So it's through this partnership of us consulting and working with us and really finding the way to make sure that they are truly reaching the LGBTQ community, that it is a safe and welcoming environment for not only us, but for everybody. That has been this amazing partnership. And for me, the first year, this is before Sherry was on the board even. So the very first year that they had Oliver Street Pride, the reason it's very emotional for me and sentimental is because I remember one of the organizations there was a mental health suicide prevention organization. And so they came to us afterwards, the vendors that were there. They talked with us and the Oliver Street folks, and they said that they had a couple of youth approach them and say that they never thought in their lifetime that they would see something like this in North Tonawanda. They assumed that this would only ever happen in Buffalo, that there would ever be a pride there. And how amazing it was to be able to, even as a high school student, as a young adult, to just walk down through that park and walk hand in hand with your same-sex significant other and not be stared at, not be ridiculed, be embraced and welcomed was overwhelming for a lot of the attendees. And they wanted to make sure that we knew that, that what we had done truly made an impact in that community. So after that, it was a no-brainer. Whatever minuscule fears there were in putting on an event were far outweighed by the benefit of what having a Pride celebration in North Tonawanda meant.
You know, Brian somewhat jumped to a question I wanted, but maybe we can explore this a little bit more. When you do have these events, like you said, it's you consider it mission critical to be in these communities. I'm curious, again, you expressed some anecdotes from a couple of young people, which is, you know, really encouraging to see that they can, you know, feel safe and move forward. But I'm sure you're hearing similar conversations at some of these other events as well. Can you share some of what you see? I mean, it has to be tremendously emotional, I would have to think, in some cases.
I know of one off the top of my head, if you want me
to
go.
Which one are you thinking?
Well, you weren't present at this one, but we did an outreach event at Art Park. And we had a father come up to the tent, and he basically indicated that he was so grateful to see a Niagara Pride tent, or just a Pride tent in Lewiston. And he was telling us that it was not a good experience when his son came out, and he was filled with a lot of regret because things were said, and ultimately his son did end up committing suicide because of bullying and what he was experiencing. And the father just kept saying, I wish you were here sooner. I wish this was here years ago, because it would have helped my son. Like, he could have gone to some place that would have embraced him. But knowing that you guys do education, that you are in the community teaching about different allyship programs or diversity, he's like, it would have helped me, I think, understand what was going on with my son and would have avoided possibly that outcome. So it's those stories that really resonate with me and really speak to why we're there, because there are kids that do that. The statistic as it stands right now from the Trevor Project, we know that depression rates are higher in LGBTQ youth, anxiety rates are higher, bullying rates are significantly higher than their straight counterparts. But in 2019, their study indicated that every 45 seconds in the United States, an LGBTQ youth between the ages of 13 and 21 attempts suicide. So by the time we're done with today's program, we're here for an hour today speaking. So at a minimum, I'm not good with math, unfortunately. That's
right.
But at a minimum, that's 60 LGBTQ youth across the country that will have attempted suicide. So that's why for Sherry and I and the rest of the board of Niagara Pride, we talk about it being mission critical, because if even showing up at one event, one concert, or one
pancake breakfast, anything.
Exactly.
Spaghetti,
whatever it is.
Dinner, whatever we do.
Whatever the event is, if it just shows that there is some place that has LGBTQ people that are happy, that are role models for the community, that you can be your authentic self and live a happy life, if that will prevent at least one of those statistic youth from attempting suicide, then all of this will have been worth it.
And I feel compelled, since the topic came up here, to also mention the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Yes.
Is at 988, right?
Yes. Yep.
And are there, I mean, is there a chance to reach out to Niagara Pride perhaps for a conversation or consultation in any way?
So we would strongly encourage, because of how our organization is set up, we are 8 volunteer board members, all of us having day jobs and
except
working.
Well,
Sherry's retired, but we won't get into that. Sherry's very busy with other organizations. But we don't necessarily or maintain a crisis line or even a phone line people would be able to get access to us as quickly. So we really refer back to the national organizations like the Trevor Project, the Matthew Shepard Foundation. They have established hotlines for LGBTQ youth. And if you are a veteran who's LGBTQ, there is the Veterans Crisis Line. So there are dedicated amazing resources, both nationally and even locally with crisis services. Please reach out to them if you are contemplating suicide.
It must be also a big part of it is, again, feeling that you're not alone, right? I mean, that's got to be, and I think feeling detached, no matter who you are and whatever part of life you find yourself, I mean, that's not unnatural. But, you know, I would think especially for a young person growing up in a school, whether it's in a rural area, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That sense is going to be there, not constantly, but it's going to be a recurring theme.
Oh, yeah. And especially if you're young, it doesn't matter. Factor out gender and sexual orientation or gender expression. Yeah.
Right.
You got the hormones bubbling. Mm-hmm. You've got all this going on. Maybe, you know, you don't have friends. Your friends don't like you. So you've got all this going on and no one to talk to.
Right. You could already be socially awkward. You could be, yes, like me, a geeky kid. Like, there's all these
things.
Isn't
it funny when we get older, we all realize we're all a bunch of geeks?
I know.
Yes.
And then I rue the day that I ruined some of my older toys knowing how much they sell for nowadays. But
yes,
that's a whole nother conversation.
Yes.
That one was put out for another show.
Yeah. Exactly. But no, we're already awkward as kids, as teenagers. So when you feel like you guys are saying it, like feeling that level of isolation is even more damaging psychologically to a lot of people.
Yeah. I was made fun of. I was a heavyset youth, so I understand how people feel and being ostracized, you know. And I went to a high school. I was the only Black in my high school. So once again, I know how the LGBTQ youth, even seniors, feel. The loneliness. No one cares. So.
Exactly.
But the reality is there's plenty of people who care.
That care. You just got to find them. And being an older person, I didn't know that when I was a youth, but now I know, which makes my heart even more wanting to help because I do understand how you feel.
Yeah.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're talking with two members of Niagara Pride with us this morning. The president is Ron Piasecny, and also the program chair for Niagara Pride is Sherry Fawcett. Appreciate you guys coming in and talking to us. There's a lot more to get into here, including we haven't even talked about Rainbow Pride, which is coming up June 29th.
Yes.
What do we expect?
So we expect a lot this year.
Okay.
As I think the theme has been, 2024 has been our year of growth. Rainbow City Pride is absolutely no different. So we have expanded the performances that will be available and demonstrations. Last year, we had one stage where we had drag performers, some music for the festivities. This year, we will have on our main stage, again, some local drag queens. We will have a nationally known drag queen, Jayla, will be there. And then we have a secondary performance stage where we will have artisans and other performers showcasing things like a local LGBTQ author will be there to sign his book.
Who is that?
Charles Pilmer.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right.
It's a hyphenated name.
Yes.
I can't remember the middle name. So I know it's something like that.
All right.
And then we will also have, let's see here, from the Niagara Arts and Culture Center, from the NAC, we will have a artist there that will be doing panels to turn into a quilt. So he will be asking individuals to write down on these pieces of fabric what pride means to them. And that will ultimately be incorporated later this year into a massive quilt that will be on display.
Hmm.
So that's something that we're doing as well. And then we have the aquarium will be there with their ambassador animals. we keep asking if we're able to put like little pride
bow ties on them. And I'm like,
they keep giving us dirty looks. They're like, you can't do that to the animals. So.
But it's not being mean. It's being cute.
Exactly. But we'll have that going on as a secondary stage. We have
Zumba
going on. We will have chair massages available for individuals. And then we have 20 or so vendors that will be there representing either various businesses that are LGBTQ owned, small artisan businesses, as well as nonprofits that are local. So like the Department of Health that runs a sexual wellness clinic. And
unicorn horse carriage ride.
Oh, that's right.
There's a unicorn horse carriage ride?
Yes,
we had it there last year. So there's a farm. They don't own unicorns, unfortunately. We do have to dispel the myth.
Oh, okay, you had me there.
But there will be a horse dressed as a unicorn that will pull a carriage around, and they're free rides that people can hop on. Yep.
All day.
Wow. So. And so it's a, what, an Old Falls Street? Where is it?
Old Falls Street.
Okay.
If you're familiar with the area, it's right on the block that houses the Culinary Institute, Sear. I think the Barnes & Noble bookstore is right on that block as well. So we will be set up there. Our first event to kind of kick it off will be at 11 o'clock. We're doing a Pride Interfaith Service. Where a number of churches are sending their spiritual leaders for an hour to talk about spirituality and finding ways to be embracing. Sorry. Right. That's not a word. Embracing of the LGBTQ community. So that's starting at 11 o'clock. And then the alternative performance will start after that. The main festival starts at 1 o'clock, goes until 6 o'clock. We have three dedicated after parties that are going on within Niagara Falls itself. And once again, the state park at 10 o'clock will be doing the illumination of the falls in the Pride colors and a fireworks display.
It's from, I say, this event goes from sunrise to sunset.
Right.
Yes. Yep.
It's a day. And the energy of everybody there, it's incredible.
Yes.
You know, to hear that the colors are going to be on Niagara Falls and the illumination makes me recall, actually, one of your sponsors driving in early in the morning like I do, when it's well dark, the M&T Plaza downtown had their building illuminated in Pride colors as well. And they are a sponsor of a lot of your events, right?
They are, yes. So this year, M&T has been an amazing community partner and sponsor. They sponsored 4 out of the 5 Pride events. So for all of our June events, they're our sponsor.
Yeah, wow.
Also
yep. They were not a 5K sponsor. However, with some of our other community partners that we have to give them props for is the Discover Niagara shuttle.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So this year they will be offering and have been offering a service where they take their shuttles, they do free rides for individuals throughout the Niagara County region. They've partnered with us to be able to bring people and have dedicated routes that will bring people to our various Pride events. So we had that for the last few Pride events, and we'll also have that for Rainbow City.
Okay. So people that normally couldn't get to us can get to us, and that's the exciting part also.
Yeah.
So nobody's missing out.
Yeah, so that is this coming Saturday, June 29th, 11 to 10, at Old Falls Street in Niagara Falls. All the information, is it posted at your website yet?
It is. So www.niagarapride.org, or you can go on our Facebook. Our handle is Niagara Pride, parentheses, serving all of Western New York.
You also have a really interesting event coming up later in the summer, part of your season of Pride 2024, the Laramie Project.
Yes.
You're going to be presenting that.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Laramie Project, what people can expect, and maybe we'll also can get a little into the background of the Laramie Project as well.
Absolutely. So this year we have partnered with Western Door Productions. They are a small community theater that is based in Niagara Falls. They operate within the NAC, the Niagara Arts and Culture Center. So they will be doing a production, a stage reading of the Laramie Project, which for those of your listeners that are not familiar with the Laramie Project, it's the story of Matthew Shepard a young gay man who was brutally murdered by two individuals. And his murder, along with James Baird, who was a black man that was, I believe it was in Texas,
yes. Mm-hmm.
That was murdered that same year, their deaths led to the enactment of the Matthew Shepard, James Baird hate crimes bill, which has now been in existence for 15 years. So this being its 15th anniversary, that's why we decided to host and have the Laramie Project as one of our final events for Season of Pride.
Yeah, the Matthew Shepard story is probably really one of the more disturbing stories that you might want to hear.
Yes.
Student at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, of course, as you talked about, murdered, and murdered in a brutal fashion for sure. But the reason behind bringing it, tell me about that. Let's get into that a little bit. Why you feel like, obviously there's a connection there and an importance, but at the same time, it seems like you're really, you don't seem to want to be sitting still.
No. And this may be me getting on my high horse or my soapbox a little bit about this stuff. So part of our trainings and our mission that we do is we want to educate the community and provide knowledge about the LGBTQ experience. And one of those things that is an unfortunate reality for being LGBTQ is the constant bombardment of anti-LGBTQ pieces of legislation that we are seeing along with the rise in hate crimes. So right now, every year that I have been doing trainings, every year I start off by basically saying the year before was one of the deadliest for LGBTQ people.
Every year you have to say that?
Every year. It's just the numbers keep rising in terms of the attacks on LGBTQ people. In 2022, the Department of Homeland Security actually issued a national bulletin in November indicating that LGBTQ folks and religious minorities were the number one targets for domestic terrorism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other organizations actually followed suit soon after that was issued by indicating that certain states are not friendly to LGBTQ people. They issued travel advisories, and certain countries have actually issued warnings to their LGBTQ citizens saying that the United States may not be safe, or at least these areas of the United States are not safe for you. So that is a reality that we face on a daily basis. And going back to the legislation piece, so last year there were 510 pieces of legislation that were introduced state, local, and federal wide that were targeting LGBTQ people. And those included things either basically schools that you couldn't teach LGBTQ history, or things like the Don't Say Gay Bill, as it's become known, curtailments on LGBTQ civil rights. There we've seen pieces of legislation introduced about that. We've also seen access to healthcare being limited for the trans community, even the LGBTQ community. So since 2018, when the ACLU has been tracking this, in 2018, only 41 pieces of legislation. Now, I say only, I mean, that alone right there is a shocking number. But every year it has grown. 2023 ended off with 510 pieces of legislation. And as of June 1st this year, so we're halfway through the year, and we're at 515. So we're looking at potentially doubling last year's anti-LGBTQ pieces of legislation.
I know this isn't necessarily your concern. Niagara Pride's concern would be more when we get into this issue about making sure people stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
But can you, or do you have an understanding of why there is an increase? Because on one side of the coin here in Western New York, we're seeing, an expansion. We're seeing Newfane Pride, Oliver Street Pride. We're seeing it expand.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, elsewhere, not necessarily the case.
We have seen, over the last couple of years, I think, in this country, a lot of individuals that may not have voiced, necessarily, their discriminatory views. They may have hidden them.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple of years in politics, I would say probably the last 8-10 years or so, we have seen every year certain pockets of individuals become more emboldened with their rhetoric, with the verbal attacks, the online attacks, the push for legislation. And that's also translating into actual physical attacks on our community. So I think what's, unfortunately, the way the political system is right now, or kind of what we're seeing within the political system, I don't see anything changing, unfortunately, anytime soon. Rhetoric is kind of becoming more prevalent and more deadly.
And just to maybe take one more step, just to make sure, because I think sometimes, and this is politics for probably centuries, that, you know, there's a cloaking of rhetoric, right? That, you know, it's utilized in a different way. Are there certain catchwords that maybe politicians are using that, you know, just the average voter may not notice that should be highlighted? I mean, I don't know if you kind of understand where I'm going with this, but just, you know, the average person who probably really doesn't care either way, but, you know, but there's something that's catching them about this legislation because it represents something about some sort of myth about America. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on that.
So I think what we see that may, I don't think it's, I know where you're going with it, and I don't think it's even masked anymore.
Okay.
I think the language of anti-woke, anti-diversity, equity, and inclusion programming, we see a lot of that in legislation right now, and politicians just blatantly saying, we don't want more DEI programs. We don't want wokeness. And that is something that, not even on a political scale, but we're seeing, and I think Sherry and I even commented just colloquially not that long ago, we're seeing less corporations this year wanting to be subjected to, I think, the backlash, the keyboard warriors typing in and criticizing on social media. So we're seeing less LGBTQ pride and diversity merchandise, or just even celebrations of pride by corporate America, I think, for fear of that backlash. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's very troubling for sure. We're talking this morning on What's Next with two members from Niagara Pride, their president, Ron Piasecny, and also the program chair, Sherry Fawcett. You know, we're coming down, and we still got quite a bit of time here to talk about, but I don't necessarily want to get mired in this, but I think there are important conversations here. You know, we were talking about allies before. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about that? A call to allies or potential allies. How important, I mean, by just what we just talked about, the importance is at a heightened time right now.
Exactly. How do you feel, Sherry, as our ally on the board and ally in our community? I mean, what brought you to our organization?
What brought me? Just seeing what you do in the community. And I'm the type of person, I wanted to be a part of it because people need to see allies like myself. I'm a Black woman. I'm an older Black woman. They need to see anybody can be an ally. And I don't see gay, trans. I see a person. And that's what I want other people to learn. See what's in their heart. Talk to them. You know, so.
No, and I think.
You're going to make me cry.
We didn't bring you to cry, Sherry.
No, I think what we're seeing a lot of in this country right now, and the statistics are panning out. This is not just our thoughts or our beliefs. We're seeing more and more people identifying as being somewhere within the LGBTQ spectrum.
Right.
And so I think as people are learning about what sexuality and gender means and gender expression, and just even within the heterosexual community, we have seen individuals saying, well, we don't want our children growing up with gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So you have a younger group of individuals who are identifying as being part of the LGBTQ community. Right now, Gallup poll in 2021 just released a study where they said that of the workforce that's coming in, when you look at the oldest generation being traditionalists, then you had baby boomers and millennials and Gen Z and all of that, the youngest population that's entering the workforce, over 20% are identifying as LGBTQ. Somewhere within that, whether they are bisexual, whether they are pansexual, whether they maybe aren't expressing the same gender outside as they are inside. So there's now a heightened sense of that within younger individuals. I think parents are more open and more accepting and more educated, I think, about these three areas, sexuality, gender expression, sexual orientation. And so I think that is causing more of this dialogue within the younger folks and is being very helpful in bringing about change on that level, especially with allies. So going back to your question about allyship, yeah, I think people are starting to realize that, hey, I've always maybe considered myself heterosexual under older terminology, but maybe I really am somewhere in the spectrum. And with that, I think we are seeing that more and more people are willing to be open, have those conversations, identify that way. And again, just knowing that, believe it or not, in terms of if you look at sexual orientation across the spectrum, bisexuals actually make up the vast majority of sexual orientation. True heterosexuality on a bell curve, if your audience is familiar with a bell curve,
okay.
True heterosexuality is on one extreme of a bell curve. True homosexuality is on the other end of a bell curve. The vast majority of the world's population is bisexual. Whether or not society has allowed people to express that and explore that aspect of themselves, that's a whole nother show right there in terms of history.
Absolutely.
But I think that's why we're seeing more allies. I think it's the education, the embracing of who the individuals are, but also just knowing that, you know what? Diversity does actually lead to better things. It creates more...
And just to jump in, diversity, back to our political discussions, almost becoming a buzzword and of, you know, people are using it as a banner to fight back against.
Exactly. And it's a very bizarre thing, because when we think about the concept of diversity, we look at this whole idea of we have integrated over time women's rights. We have seen women enter the workforce, go into professions that they've never been in, to be scientists. The contributions that women have made to science, history, art, professions that have historically excluded them, how can we possibly say that they weren't welcome or that they haven't benefited society? We look at the contributions African Americans have made, same thing. And now we're seeing more and more, we're looking at history with a more critical eye. We're seeing that LGBTQ people have been around. And so this buzzword of, we don't want diversity. Well, what are you really saying?
Right.
Who do you want then in the workforce? Like, what are you trying to go back to? Because diversity has always been about taking people in and making what has existed even better, more ideas, expanding our knowledge, creating a better society. So if you're not wanting to do that, what are your motivations? What are you looking to do then?
Right. I want to just jump back. I mean, that very troubling but touching and emotional conversation you had with the man who lost his son to suicide after, you know, expressing that he was coming out. Any thoughts to parents or anybody, you know, anybody in general, just how to help approach somebody? Because even today, even though, like you said, there are more and more people identifying with LGBTQ, but there still has to be that people are going to have to respond and hear these things. Thoughts to them of how they can be someone who helps somebody, you know, deal with what they're dealing with and move forward.
So first and foremost, I would say to any parent of somebody who is LGBTQ, recognize that your son, daughter, however they identify, they are still your child. That love that you had for them yesterday before they came out should be the predominant force as to how you move forward. that child has probably for years known and has gone through mentally the process of identifying who they are. And so it has not been an easy journey for that child. And them telling you on whatever day that they come out, it's going to be a shock to the system. Mm. It's going to leave reverberations of, oh my God, all of these conceptions that I had, the future plans I had for my kid. What does this mean? What is their safety going to be like? How will they live? Am I going to have grandkids now? Like, all of these different things are in flux because your child has come out. But at the end of the day, again, whatever would happen, whatever that future holds, if you actually do it with love and wanting to embrace your child, go and learn, go to organizations, go to meetings, go to meetups. Niagara Pride, we have social meetups that are open for everybody. Come talk to us.
We'll just sit and talk with you.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you've had these conversations.
Oh, yes.
Tell me, just share with me, if you don't mind, how the conversations go, or if you have one that stands out to you.
I'm trying to think of anything.
Yeah, I caught you off guard, though.
It's just being able to sit and talk with the parents and saying, you know, don't let your emotions, and it's hard, don't let your emotions take over. Keep your thoughts open. Talk with your child. Go for counseling, and don't let society rule you, because that's the thing with parents. I'm a parent. You're always worried about, oh, well, what's the neighbors going to think?
Right.
I don't care what the neighbors think. This is my child. I have to make sure my child is safe. So.
Exactly.
Well stated. You mentioned about, or I should say, jumped in my mind as we were talking about this. What about, obviously, schools can play a huge role in this. Mm-hmm. Counselors are available at schools. Generally speaking, Western New York school districts have the right approach, I guess, is what I'm saying.
So we have seen the expansion of, they used to be called GSAs. Well, they still are GSAs. Mm-hmm. The acronym has changed. So it used to be Gay Straight Alliances.
Okay.
And now a lot of schools are referring to them as Gender Sexuality Alliances or Diversity Clubs.
Yes.
And in rural areas, we have seen the expansion. One school in particular where my husband went to years ago in Niagara County, he couldn't be out. There was no way. And now there is a flourishing GSA where not only did they receive one of our grants, which I definitely want to highlight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because we do, as an organization, we give out thousands of dollars in grants to schools to develop LGBTQ programming and services that would be beneficial, as well as that school also had one of our first scholarship winners that we give out to LGBTQ youth. So we are seeing very positive changes and a movement towards embracing diversity and welcoming us, especially LGBTQ students, the topic, resources. They want to move in that direction. Yes, you'll still find some schools that find it difficult to embrace that, or you will find school boards that maybe find it difficult given the unique legal complexities and the political complexities. But I think the vast majority of teachers that we have spoken with and educators want to do right by their students and want to know
questions of us and who can we contact for this? Where can we get more books about this for our students? It was incredible talking with their sponsors when we'd go and hand out the scholarships, and they're just so thankful to us. And it made me just smile on the inside because they're trying.
Right.
And as long as they're trying, it's all I can ask.
And you did touch on the school board issue real quick, and I'm just wondering if you know of any or you know, because we almost certainly heard about the book banning and school board candidates almost running on that platform, for lack of a better term. Are we seeing school board elections where candidates again aren't necessarily cloaking their anti-LGBTQ views?
So I haven't seen personally anybody that very specifically has been campaigning on that, but I can say that there is, we recently did have a school board that a teacher notified us that there have been some issues where the LGBTQ organization needed transportation, needed a school bus. The school district was treating that organization a little bit differently, requiring signed permission slips and extra layers that other organizations were not required.
Right, the ski club probably didn't have to go through that.
Exactly. Right. And that's where we can provide that training and that education. But school boards need to be a little bit more savvy in this day and age, because there are legal ramifications to doing that. And so I think even though the rhetoric may be there from certain candidates, I think once they actually get onto the school board, lawsuits and other things tend to kind of curb the rhetoric.
Right. And we should also mention, of course, Ron, you have your law degree, and so you know this a little bit. But I mean, it's worth noting, I most certainly hear it in our workplace, that New York State has extra levels of anti-discrimination laws that are there. So there are protections that should be noted, right?
There are, and I definitely cannot stress this enough in terms of for people's knowledge and why it's important. Your local politicians, your state politicians, New York, yes, has some of the best protections for LGBTQ people across the board. However, when we look at the federal government, there's only one law across all of the federal government that addresses LGBTQ rights, and that's only for marriage. So employment, housing, being able to serve on a jury, not having to be subjected to higher mortgage rates when you go to a bank, all of the Title VII protections, ADA, ADA, all of these different things that would sometimes look at LGBTQ have only come about as a result of courts making decisions. Mm. So if you are living in a state where, at least if your state is offering additional protections, look at what your local politicians are campaigning on. Look at what they are saying, because that can definitely impact your rights. Because we've seen the Supreme Court recently start backpedaling on rights, taking away women's rights to healthcare and to abortion. And we've seen Supreme Court justices be very vocal, saying that if given the chance, they would overturn the same-sex marriage case. And they would also even overturn so far back as the Lawrence case, which said that having anti-sodomy laws or laws that said same-sex relations were illegal, they want to go back and reverse that so that states can pass those kinds of laws again. So it is important to look at what your state and local politicians are saying.
Well, Ron and Sherry really highlighted some troubling issues and issues that I think our listeners most certainly, if they weren't aware of, most certainly will become aware of and probably hopefully become active with regard. But we don't want to leave this on that note, in the sense that because this coming weekend is Rainbow Pride, and it's an opportunity to get a unicorn ride through the city of Niagara Falls.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Come celebrate with us. Come be part of the entertainment. Check out all the different vendors. We have events going on in July, August. I think the biggest thing is, if you are interested and want to be part of our community and as an ally, as a member, and just find out what's going on, check out our website, www.niagarapride.org. Check us out on Facebook, Niagara Pride, parentheses, serving all Western New York. We do have an Instagram account. I'm older. I don't know what the Instagram account is. Our social media manager is going to kill me. But you can find us on social on find all you. The social we'll medias. We're there. So, yeah.
Just come to our events. Come out and just walk around and just see all the things that are going on, how much fun we're having.
Exactly.
Nice. Very good. Well, it was fun, informative, and not a little bit emotional talking with you this hour. I appreciate your time. Ron Piasecki is the president of Niagara Pride, and Sherry Fawcett is the program chair for Niagara Pride. Thank you very much for being with us on What's Next.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
This has been What's Next on WBFO.